So with that, we'll move to our opening remarks in deference to our incumbent. Senator Michiki, would you please give us a couple minutes for opening remarks?
It's on.
Thank you for this incredible turnout and for the chamber putting this on today. My family is here, most of them. Maddie's working, Grandma's in Anchorage, and Lucy's at camp. But my wife is here, and two of my four daughters, Grandma Marlene and Grandpa Roger, are here. So, as you know, we've done a lot together in Soldotna when I was mayor. That began my record of cutting costs, lowering taxes, and bringing people together for great things. Soldotna went through a rebirth, and it's an amazing little community. And we all did it together. That's what I do best, is bring people together to find solutions to tough problems. They also hired me in 2013 to throw the bums out that ran our UGF budget up to $8.2 billion. We're down now with the UGF budget of about $4.1 billion. So I did that. And we are spending significantly less. I have cut more than any legislator in the history of the state from the operating budget. I've served as the chair and co-chair of key legislative committees since my first day in Juneau. First year I was voted most effective legislator, 2013. I was in Senate leadership by year four and remain there today. Only one of two in history have served as the majority leader and on finance at the same time. I specialize in finance, and that was Lauren Lehman. I led the Senate majority as the only fully functioning body in Juneau right now. We stopped the permanent negative impacts on Alaskans and Alaskan business. I wrote many pieces of the oil tax code that has reawakened the North Slope, NPRA, and ANWR. I am focused on education, public safety, senior, veteran, and disability services. We have a lot more to do. I think we've done a great job, and I hope you can support me in this election. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our challenger in the Republican primary is Ron Gillum. Ron, would you please give us 2 minutes for your opening remarks?
Ron Gillum. I've been around Soldotna. I've made Alaska and Soldotna my home for 33 years. This is my first delve into any kind of politics. Kind of stay at home a lot, but I have my wife and my granddaughters here. The rest of my family's all working. I work on the North Slope. I've spent 16 years in a peninsula here working for the oil field maintenance companies. And had a chance to go to the slope, and I always said I'd never go up there, but I wish I'd have went a long time ago. It's a great place to work. I know there's a lot of stuff that people are unhappy with, and when they started getting into my granddaughter's PFD, I decided, well, the guy says, what do you have to lose? So like I said, never being in politics, it is something new to me. And it is difficult, but like I said, I will do everything I can. I answer questions as best my ability. I am nervous. Like I said, this is a stand in front of people. It's hard for me to do because it's not my thing. If you have questions, I'll be around afterwards, and like I said, I will answer your questions as best of my ability, and. Hopefully, maybe we can make some changes down in Juneau, and I appreciate any support I can get from you. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ron, and thank you for mentioning that you will be around afterward, because part of this format is to try and get you out of here exactly on time, because most of you have jobs to get back to, but if you don't and you'd like to ask questions, we cannot exhaust all the questions and issues in 45 minutes that we have here today, so please, they are on the campaign trail, they are willing to listen and talk to you, so if you have time, they will have time to meet with you afterward. With that, we'll get to our first question, which we will lead off with you, Mr. Gillum. What applicable experience would you be bringing to the job as state senator?
Hold on. How do you turn on? There we go. Since I've been in Alaska, I've been a small business owner. And before I came up here, my father was a contractor, and I worked in his business. So as far as putting budgets together, I know that you can only work with the money you have. I have no place to go. I will not maxed out a credit card. I can only spend the amount of money that I have. And when you start seeing money spent that doesn't belong to you, then you know, that's not the way to go. As far as politics, I really don't have a whole lot of experience in politics, like I said. But you know, I do feel I know how to manage money. And so anyway, that's pretty much it. Like I said, it's something new, so I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And Senator, in your opening remarks, you elaborated a little bit about your experience you bring to the job, but would you like to add to that?
Well, certainly. I have a lifetime of private sector experience as an LNG expert running large budgets since I was in my late 20s and government budgets since I was Mayor of Soldotna. I have experience on three continents in industries that are important to the state. I'm involved in fishing, I'm involved in oil and gas, been involved in tourism, I've owned restaurants and snowplow companies, and been a small business owner my entire life. But I don't believe in debt. My family lives without debt, zero. And the reality of it is, that is how we have to run a government. I came into office when oil was $107 a barrel and it went down to 29. And the reason I got into office is because it was clear we were going to get in that position. We had overspent for decades, and it was time to turn that ship around. I've done that, I've proven I have the experience. I will continue to reduce where we can while still putting a priority on key services.
You can remain standing if you want, because you'll be first in the next question. Which legislator, past or present, do you admire most, and why?
What's funny, I already talked about Loren Lehman. He was, so Loren Lehman is my legislator that I respect the most. And he's been a mentor of mine since the beginning. He was the only other senator to serve as majority leader and on finance, recognized for his leadership and his skills with managing large budgets and being able to manage them well. But he also never gave up on his basic philosophies in life. He always stayed true to himself. Like I always say, I'm not in Juneau to save my butt. I'm there today. I'm there to save yours forever. The reality of it is, all the decisions I make are for our kids and grandkids so that we do have a sustainable future. And that's what Loren did. He's a great man, and I aspire to remain in his footsteps for the rest of my career.
Thank you. Mr. Gill, the same question. Which legislator, past or present, do you admire most, and why?
Well, not being in that circle of people, it's kind of tough. But I think Jay Hammond, with his vision of what Alaska should be, when the permanent fund came into account, or, you know, was put together, there was they knew that there was no budget to run our government. So they put the permanent fund together, which would supply money to run the government, because there just wasn't enough people in the state, and it's still that way. So the vision that Jay and the others had as far as trying to get the finances somehow, you know, Jay's was a good man. Like I said, you're in something I really don't know a whole lot about, because I'm not in that circle of people. So hopefully I can find out.
Okay, you go first on this next one. The opening of ANWR. It's cute they put the acronym here, ANWR, W-A-R. It's something that Alaska's been working on for 40 years. It's now open. Will it be a blessing or a curse, in your opinion?
I think it's going to be a blessing. Like I said, this state runs on the oil revenue, and getting out into ANWR, it's a very small footstep that they're going to go out into, and if anybody's been on the North Slope, you hear stories about how they tear up the ground, and that's not true. They have more regulations up there than any place I've ever worked. They go in, they build a small pad, and they put a pipeline in. As far as finances, that's going to produce a lot of oil, and hopefully we can get the pipeline full again. Just running it half full is not producing revenue it needs to. And we've been out into NPRA already, so getting out into ANWR, I think, is going to be a fantastic thing.
Thank you. Peter, same question, ANWR, blessing or curse?
So we've worked hard to get Anwar open. I passed a resolution my first year in Juneau that encouraging the feds to get it open. We've continued to work with our delegation in D.C. They did some good work on opening Anwar. We also pushed for reopening the areas that have been closed by the Obama administration and NPRA, and actually the geology in NPRA looks even better. We have had amazing discoveries in NPRA. There's about 635,000 barrels a day of production that is likely to come on in the next 5 to 7 years. So the more barrels you put in, the less important the price is. It's just those two levers that are very important to the economy of Alaska. Things are looking up, and most of it has to do with our work on Senate Bill 21. I wrote some significant pieces of that, and the reality of it is the investment on the North Slope has been incredible since the passage of that bill. So things are looking up in the oil and gas patch in Alaska.
Okay, you'll be first on this next one, Peter. Sticking with the energy and mega projects, the Alaska LNG project is in its regulatory permitting phase and filings to the federal government. However, the state legislature has not introduced a long-term funding initiative by authorizing program receipt authority, known, I'm told, as the PRA, for this project. Do you support providing a long-term funding stream concept for the pipeline project?
Well, that's a great question. I did not give funding authority. I did not give receipt authority in this budget, and there's a specific reason that I didn't. The reason is that the administration simply has no idea with the exposure there is to the state on the deductions that companies can take that invest in the pipeline, right? So we have to count. When I talked about the increased production, we count on a certain level of revenue. That revenue looks like it's going up. We're in the mid-70s now. We're pushing 80 a few weeks ago. Things are pretty stable. The reality of it is we have to understand what those deductions are going to cost, because if this project kicks off, we could have zero revenue for the first 5 or 6 years. So we're not giving receipt authority until the administration can explain that they understand the impacts to the state. We're largely supportive of the AKLNG project. We'll do what we can as partners, but we have to understand that exposure before we give receipt authority.
And Mr. Gittle, the same question regarding program receipt authority and the LNG project, please.
Well, unfortunately, I don't really understand what you're asking, because, like I said, that's not being in politics. I was told to research the LNG project, and I really don't agree with it. China has contracts with other countries for the gas that they need. This pipeline is engineered for 20 million tons of gas a year, and that is what China is going to need after 2030. And people think that they're going to get a shoot off of this gas line. And that, if we're not going to get anything out of it, then I do not agree with it. As far as the state being involved, I think a gas line, it should be privately owned, not state owned.
Okay, Ryan, you're first up on this one. Regarding Proposition 1, stand for Alaska or stand for salmon, where do you stand?
I stand for Alaska. That's just too much damaging that could happen to the state. They could shut down a lot of our construction. I know, like I said, on the slope, it took them 5 years to get a permit to cross one river. And you pass this and they're going to shut it down. So I stand for Alaska. And granted, we stand for salmon too, but it has to be done a different way. And Proposition 1, it needs to fail.
Senator Michiki, stand for Alaska, stand for salmon.
That's an easy one for me, or the nice ladies from Cook Inlet Keepers here today. No, I don't see them. The reality of it is that would impact everything from highway projects to grandmothers wanting to put a culvert in their driveway. I'm not in support. I stand for Alaska. I served on the Fish Habitat Partnership, and during that partnership, of all the different partnerships in the state, not once was Alaska's permitting program cited as being a problem for fish survival and fish production. So we see a lot of influence from organizations from outside. That's largely who's funding this. We need to be Alaskans and be able to make our own decisions on permitting in the state. The reality of it is we have an extremely robust program that is world-renowned for success in protecting fish habitat, and I think it's adequate with some minor tweaks, and I'm okay with discussing that within the legislature.
Okay, you're first on this one, Senator. State income tax, sales tax, or no tax? We've been hearing about it for the last 4 years, and what is your opinion on sales tax versus income tax versus no tax?
Well, I think you know my opinion. We have, you know, you guys have seen these charts. I predicted the price of oil within $2 of where we are right now 2 years ago. What happened was the administration and the Democrats tried to solve a temporary problem with a permanent solution. That permanent solution was 13 different taxes that we killed. And the reason we didn't support them is we knew where we would be. We knew that good policy and investment in Alaska was going to bring us forward. The reality of it is our budget is not as low as it can be. In some areas, we have to increase spending. In some areas, like public safety, in some areas, we continue to have room to reduce, like the Department of Health and Social Services, which is a budget I've had for the last 4 years. So predicting those, we're not in support of new taxes, especially as we're climbing out of this recession. We want to make it as favorable a climate for investment as possible.
Thank you. And Ron, we've been told we need new taxes to stabilize the deficit and to balance the state's budget. Do you like a state income tax, state sales tax, or no tax?
No tax. I'm not in favor of state tax, income tax. Like I said, work on the slope. I keep hearing a lot about we have to tax the non-residents. Well, the thing you're overlooking is when you tax the non-residents, you tax the residents. So I'm against any kind of an income tax. I'm against a state sales tax. We have enough taxes. The state has enough revenue coming in. It's just being mismanaged. And I think that managing things different, looking at where the money's going. There's a lot of places we're spending money that it doesn't need to be spent. I think our troopers, our city police, especially the troopers, I know some of the cities have only two troopers for 24-hour period, so that gives them no time off. But I say, as far as taxes go, no, we got plenty of money. We do not need any kind of new taxes.
Okay, Ryan, you're first, and this one is sort of a follow-up on that question. With them saying that we have to increase our revenue stream to balance the budget, where would you cut if that is the opposite of increasing the revenue? Where specifically would you cut the budget?
I went to a website that has, it's called Alaska's Checkbook, and there is millions of dollars in there that can be cut. One thing I would like to see is the legislature moves to Anchorage, so that we're not paying airfare and moving back and forth to Juneau. We don't need to move to Capitol, just move the legislature to Anchorage on a road system, which would save a lot of money. I do not believe in Planned Parenthood. I think that can be cut. There's hospitals and clinics around that take care of the women, but I do not believe that our taxes should be going to pay for killing babies. So as far as Planned Parenthood goes, it can go away. I know it's a sore subject for a lot of people, but that's just my belief, and so that's part of the place I would cut. And that Alaska Checkbook, if you want to go see, look at that. There is a lot of places that can be cut.
And Peter, if you had the only vote, where would you cut if those cuts would be followed up with just your one vote, specifically?
Well, luckily I've had that one vote, and that one vote has extended to 11 in the Senate, 21 in the House, and the governor has signed my cuts of the $400 million I talked about. So there's lots of things on Facebook that talk about the cuts that can happen in the $50,000, $75,000 range. I've made the equivalent of 8,000 $50,000 cuts with $400 million. That's not including the big cuts we made on what we didn't pay on the Hess supplemental and what we didn't pay in capital as we retracted on spending. So my biggest focus is Department of Health and Social Services. I've had that budget for 4 years. There is lots of room. Half the people in the state of Alaska are unemployed. A third of them are on Medicaid. And half of the babies born in the state last year were on Medicaid. We simply have to manage eligibility and utilization of Medicaid. And we have to stop paying twice the highest average in the country for every procedure. So there's a lot we can do. There's a lot of room to cut in that area.
Thank you. Oh, okay, you're first again.
Okay.
Everybody is so interested in personal flotation devices during this election. PFD is on everybody's tongue. Oh. Okay, so viewers regarding permanent fund dividend cap. They don't have a personal flotation cap, do they? So what is your opinion regarding, your views regarding the PFD cap?
Well, I don't know specifically what you mean by the PFD cap. And it's there's a card floating around you'll see on your table that talks about voting. I think there's like this impression that someone voted to cut the dividend. We have not, so the Senate Bill 26 that originally had the reductions in the dividend, I dropped a bill called Senate Bill 185 that said we're not going to restructure the dividend. Alaskans are not in support of restructuring the dividend. What we're simply going to do is protect the earnings reserve with a max draw. Governor vetoed the dividend 2 years ago. Last year, he reduced it. This year, the House can only pass with a, remember, it takes 21 votes. We can talk about what I want to do, but we can only have, we only had the choice of a $1,600 dividend. So there has not been a permanent cut or change to the structure of the dividend. I believe we're going to be in the shape to, for a regular dividend next year and in the future. And that's my hope on making this a friendly business and investment client, or atmosphere.
Thank you. Mr. Gillum, your views regarding the PFD cap?
The PFD was supposed to have been $2,700 this year, and government decided to take $1,100 of it. The cap, that dividend is, belongs to the people of Alaska. That is our payment for not being able to sell out the resources under our land. And lost my train of thought. But anyways, the cap, how can you cap something that doesn't belong to you? But for the last 3 years, our dividend has been cut by government, and the money is not theirs. It belongs to us. It belongs to you. It belongs to them. I mean, it belongs to my grandkids. And when they start getting into that, like I said, that's what got me into this, is when they started getting into my grandkids' school funds, then I decided to get in. And you know, that, leave our kids alone. And that's their money. It's not the government's.
Okay, you stay up here first in this one. What ideas do you have to grow the state's economy, Mr. Gillum?
You know, I've looked around Kenai, Soldotna, Anchorage. There's a lot of big buildings that are empty. I think we should go outside to some of the bigger companies and say, look, we have all this space up here. Maybe make them some kind of a tax incentive. You know, maybe I have to talk to Charlie about this and give them 2 years that they don't pay any taxes to the city after that. But the, where you get the revenue is from the employees. If they come up here, they would hire local people. Therefore, the local people are going to spend money in the stores, and that's where you get your taxes. And of course, Anchorage doesn't have a sales tax, but we do. So, like I said, there's a lot of stores that can be filled up. The Lowe's building over here, that is a big building. It could hold a lot of people, and would hold a lot of business.
Thank you. And Peter, ideas on how to grow the state's economy?
Well, I'll stick with state issues. Although Charlie's a great man, the focus of mine is value added to our products. The reality of it is we've been sending raw fish, timber, and ore out of this state for 125 years. And what we're trying to do in the legislature is incentivize that value adding occurs in this state. We produce a whole bunch of really great stuff and we send it out raw, and people make the majority of their profit elsewhere. So it's time to turn that around. We have, you know, if you look at the value of tourism in this state, I mean, it's through the entire recession, it was the one shining star economically. We need to help get more Americans or people from around the world to come visit, learn about our products, and market our products in a finished, market-ready condition to create thousands and thousands of jobs in Alaska.
Okay, I guess you're up first on this one. If you are returned to Juneau, will you be in the majority caucus?
I will absolutely be in the majority caucus. I'll be leading the majority caucus. A lot of people misunderstand how that works. Fighting to be in the minority is fighting to not be represented. You know the 5-lane road we're getting on the spur? That's because of us in the majority funding that. when things occur that have to occur in infrastructure, it's because of the majority being able to fund that. Sitting in a tiny office with no staff and not having a vote other than on the floor, guess what? When it gets to the floor, the work's done. So the reality of it is, you've got to be in the majority in order to make it happen. And for those folks that sit with their pretty white jerseys and never want to vote on anything, they are costing us hundreds of millions of dollars a year by not engaging, whether they're on the right or on the left. The fact is, if they're not engaged with the majority, they are costing all of you money. We should have gotten out for significantly less than we did this year. The House had to buy their last vote for $40 million, and that doesn't work.
Okay, and Ron, if you were sent to Juneau, would you be in the majority caucus?
No, I would not. I think the majority caucus, there's only a half a dozen people that run the state because of that, and they start, like you deal with Mike Dunleavy and Laura Reinbold, you kind of get chastised for not agreeing and following along. I am not a follower, never have been, and I just cannot go in. And because a small group of people say you're going to do this or we're going to chastise you and your constituents are going to lose out, you know, that's not the way it works. Like I said, I'm not a follower, never have been, and if I go to Juneau, I will not be a follower. And I hope that there's enough people down there that a caucus is one thing, but the binding caucus, that I do not agree with the binding caucus.
Okay, you're first on this one, Ron. Governor Walker recently expressed concerns about the Pebble Mine in writing, and what are your thoughts about that project?
Honestly, I don't know a whole lot about Pebble Mine. I do know it was a foreign country that was trying to get in. It was Canada. I am against any foreign country trying to get in and open our state up. We have enough people here, enough businesses that we can open ourselves. If it's something, if they can guarantee that that mine is not going to spill over and destroy the best fishery in the world, then that's something to look at. But if they can't guarantee it, no, I am completely against it. Sure, it would produce a lot of jobs, but at what risk? And I'm not willing to put the whole Bristol Bay area at risk for some gold.
Thank you very much, Senator Michiki. Governor Walker has expressed his concerns about the Pebble Mine. What are your thoughts about the project?
Well, what I believe in is the permitting system that we have in the U.S. And just deciding we're not going to do something because a group of people opposes it is unacceptable. We have a system. My personal feelings, I don't think it's the right project. I think they have a lot more work to do. I don't know if there could be safe phase development in a much smaller scale. They came out with this giant, you know, Empire State Building size dam and all of those risks that were attributed to that project. I think that was the wrong project. But it doesn't mean that it couldn't occur with phase development on a smaller scale. We've got great rocks in this state, great rocks. And the reality of it is it's world class. And we need to have a permitting system that is robust yet allows people to provide adequate information to determine if those projects should go forward. I'm not in favor of it being interrupted in the middle of the permitting process, and I hope that in the future we can use the process that we have before us for a fair outcome.
Okay, let's move along, Peter, to the issue of rising health care costs and the issue that as those costs go up and the funding goes up and you only have a limited supply of revenue, other areas do not receive funding or could not receive funding that could go to like education and other needs. Your ideas on reducing medical costs, please.
Well, that's not something I can answer in a minute, but I'll talk really fast. How's that sound? The reality of it is a very complex problem. But we passed Senate Bill 74, which reduced the state spend by a couple hundred million dollars. We just passed a PBM bill, which pushes back on the large pharmaceutical companies so that we can drop the cost of that. We have to start pooling our health care coverage. Instead of it having it in little silos, we have to go with a much larger pool so that we have the buying power of a larger group, including municipalities, perhaps private industry. Perhaps we team up with other states. But Alaska being number one on what we're paying for each and every procedure and not managing our utilization when I go back into Medicaid, it's pouring billions into a very broken system. And it's something that we have to be forceful, careful, make sure that people get adequate medical coverage for what they need, but we have to do it much smarter, and that's going to be pushing back on every lobbyist that swarms that building that is making much too much money on healthcare.
Thank you. Mr. Gillum, your ideas on reducing healthcare costs.
First of all, I think we need to open the borders and be able to buy our insurance outside. And it is, you're including Medicaid, correct? I mean, there is two-thirds of the state, or 230,000 people going to be on Medicaid. And a lot of those are able-bodied people that just don't want to work. I think those people need to be checked. If they are able-bodied, if they are healthy enough to go to work, then you say, you know what, you need to go get a job, and we're not going to fund you for not doing anything. There's too many lobbyist groups, I guess you'd call them, that are trying to just pull money out of the government. The government has been just handing out money. Well, it's time for that to stop. You take responsibility for yourself. So, like I said, first of all, I think we need to open the borders, be able to go to down the lower 48 or wherever to buy our insurance, because up here, if you have one system, it's going to cost a lot.
Okay, Randy, first on this next one is regarding education, probably not only one of the largest, but one of the most productive investments that we make with our tax dollars. The education funding formula, it has been changed from time to time, but what are your views on the formula and the funding of education?
Unfortunately, I have not researched the funding, so I'm not exactly sure how it works. Of course, you only know what I've heard. I know Alaska is supposed to be paying more per child than 48 other states. I think New York is the only one that pays more per kid. And our kids are our future. And if we can't afford to put them through school, then we're not going to have a future. So if the formula is not working, then it needs to be restructured. We need to figure out what's going to make it work. But like I said, I don't have that. I have not researched that, and I have never been asked that question, but I will find out.
Thank you. And Senator Mushiki, your opinion on the education funding formula.
Well, being a Republican and a group of people that has tried to cut education in the last several years, we kept it flat for several years. This year we increased it. We pre-funded it for 2 years. The reality of it is we lost so much talent by letting education wonder if they're going to receive their funding that some of our best teachers left the state. And that's something we can't afford. If the entire state can perform like the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, we'd be in good shape. But the reality of it is we have schools in the middle of nowhere that are very expensive per student that have a very poor outcome. I think what we need to do is capture the best in practice that we do here on the Kenai, share it around the state, bring that cost down where we can. But the reality of it is those prices, when you think about the healthcare impacts, when we freeze funding for education over time, it ends up cutting into what happens in the classroom, and that ends up hurting our kids. So huge supporter of education funding, and will continue to be in the future.
And of course, cutting Chuck Busick's paycheck. Oh, I'm not supposed to elaborate, am I? But we're doing so good, you know, because Jana has kept him on time, and you guys are now up to your closing remarks, and then we'll go into the raffles and the drawings. So you guys have been great. Thanks for staying on target, on message, and obeying our timekeeper up there. And so let's start. Let's see. We began with Senator Chickie. So this time we'll begin with closing remarks. And Mr. Dillon, please, 60 seconds to sum up why you want to go to Juneau.
Summer up? Well, like I said, this is for my grandkids, for my kids. I just don't believe that Juneau has been doing what it needs to do. And like I said, I was asked, what have I got to lose? And I don't really have a lot to lose. I could do without the dividend. I could do with an income tax, and I would survive. But when I see people leaving the state and our population is going down, something's not right. So I decided to get in the race and try to stop the bleeding, I guess, for my grandkids and for my kids. That way they can live in a state that I came to 33 years ago. I think it's the best state, best place in the world to live. So, and I would like to leave that to my grandkids.
Thank you very much, candidate for State District O, Rod Gillum, and the incumbent, Senator Peter Michicki. 60 seconds to summarize.
Thank you for having this today. You sent me down 6 years ago to do a job, and I did it. Reality of it is we have some very tough times. And until we change the makeup of the House and we change the makeup or at least the ability for the administration to respond to what has to happen, there are some folks we need to replace in Juneau. But they're not the conservatives that have been the most productive on getting us down the road where we need to be right now. And that is in a position to manage. We passed a spending limit in the Senate this year. They wouldn't hear it in the House. We passed things that will control the growth of government in the future, which has got us in this position year after year after year. We need help. We need the House to turn. We need to keep the good people we have in the Senate majority that have managed the only functioning body in this state. We need to continue to keep the pressure on to manage our costs and provide incredible opportunities for Alaskans in the future. Things are looking up.
Once again, thank you both for staying with the rules of engagement and being here and to take advantage of the privilege that it is to be in a government where we choose, we elect those to represent us.